Good morning. This is Michael Collins. I'm the Family Financial Security Specialist for UW Extension, Cooperative Extension. This is the Lunchtime Learning Series where we talk about a different financial education topic each month. So today's topic, we're going to talk about retirement planning and specifically a relatively new curriculum that I want to share with folks, but also just a broader conversation about this topic of retirement planning. For those of you who are new to Lunchtime Learning Series, we present these about every month or so. And this is a way to keep up with current topics and family financial education issues. Accompanying today's discussion is a brief that is posted on the website fyi.uwex.edu/financial-series. And there you'll see right on the main page, link to retirement and estate planning basics with a little bit of a background on what today's call is for. And there is a link there for retirement and estate planning basics, and that's the brief that I'll be talking about today. That's a PDF document. If you click on it, it'll bring up a 4-page PDF. It's yellow. It's issue brief 2015-3. And so that's basically what I'll be talking through with you for about the next 20 to 30 minutes. I try to hold time as best I can to, at the end, for your questions and comments and discussion, ideas for other curricula or other needs that you might have. But you're welcome at any point in time to chime in and ask a question or to ask a clarifying point. Generally we ask that people, mute their lines when they're not speaking, but you can certainly unmute, and if I'm talking, just say something, and then we'll pause so we can hear from you. Today's call is being recorded, so in a few days, the MP3 file from the audio conversation will be posted at the FIA website, so everything is recorded and there for as an archive for future use. So if you know a colleague who wanted to be here today but didn't get a chance to listen in, a few days from now, they can have their opportunity to hear the same thing you're hearing. There are a number of links in the brief itself. So it's, as I said, it's a PDF document. In a PDF, the links are blue. So when you click any of the words that are in blue in the PDF, that'll actually bring up a website. It may, depending on what your computer's like, it may prompt you to say, is it okay to open this website? They're all okay. So if you don't panic if you get some kind of message about opening up an external link. So the PDF has embedded links. And if you really have trouble, you can always just copy the link and then paste it somewhere else so you can get there. So there's probably 20 different links in today's brief. So I just want to make sure that you know that those links are live and that you can find all the resources I'll talk about today. You can find through that. Through the web by following those links. So any questions before I begin? All right, great. So again, if you can just mute your lines, and then if you have a question, just unmute, and you can chime in then. All right, so I'm going to talk about the brief about a foundation for retirement planning, the AARP Finances 50-plus model. And before I talk about the specific Finances 50 Plus, I would say in my time as a specialist with extension, the most common question I get from county-based educators is about retirement education planning. So looking for a curriculum, looking to do a workshop, you know, what can I do on retirement education activities? And part of this is because we all know someday we want to retire, so we want to learn about these subjects ourselves. But what's interesting is when I ask, well, what are you interested in? It runs the gamut. The number of different topics that can be covered under retirement planning or about planning for retirement or education around retirement is huge. It's everything from healthcare to do I want to stay or do I want to move? Is my house appropriate for somebody who's aging? How do I deal with my kids? How do my kids deal with me? How do I think about estate planning? How do I think about claiming Social Security? It's a huge number of issues. And so what I'm going to try to do today is give you one model, I guess, one curriculum that you could think about as sort of a foundational education model. And I'm not necessarily saying you should use this curriculum, but rather this curriculum and curriculum that cover these types of topics would be a good way to start. And then once you get sort of that basics, that foundation, there's a wide number of additional work that you could do, whether that's around Social Security or estate planning or any number of other topics. So that's how I'm going to try to organize today's call as well. I'm going to talk sort of generally about retirement planning education, specifically about the AARP curriculum that I'm knowledgeable about and have done some research on, and then talk about some of the other resources that maybe you could combine with this curriculum or that you could use as follow-ons to this curriculum, or maybe use in place of the curriculum depending on what the needs of your learners are in your community. So let me just say that retirement planning is one of the more challenging, I think, financial education topics to think about. Many people learn about retirement planning at their workplace because they have a pension or retirement plan at work. And so maybe that's how to use your 401k or 403b or other kinds of tax advantage retirement plan. Or because people might have a defined pension and they're trying to understand how that works. So employers provide some information about retirement planning, but not very much. And it's usually very narrowly focused on those specific accounts that are designated for retirement. So if you want to have a broader conversation about retirement planning, including things like housing, including estate planning, including how and when to claim Medicare, or how to think about issues of, what our spending plan, how much do we need for retirement, those kinds of things. Those people are largely left to try to figure out on their own. And there are a number of seminars that are offered in communities around financial planning for people at or near retirement. But oftentimes those are sponsored by, groups that have a stake in the outcome. So an investment manager wants to help you decide how to invest your money, or an insurance agent wants to help you figure out how much insurance you need. And rightfully so, a lot of consumers or learners are pretty skeptical and not sure where to turn. So it's probably not surprising that we see a lot of requests from county-based educators and extension that they're interested in topics related to retirement planning, and that people are trying to find an objective source for these kinds of information. What I particularly like about the model I'm going to talk about today, the AARP Finances 50 Plus, is that it's targeted at lower-income workers. It's targeted at people who are in their early 50s to sort of pre-retirement age, not 40-year-olds, not 30-year-olds, but people who are within a decade or two of actually retiring. And so it's a well-targeted curriculum. It's also very basic, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think a lot of what people need as they think about their own retirement planning is just to get a grasp on some basics about their savings, about their spending, about what's important to them. And what's nice about this curriculum is that it focuses on those very topics. For a lot of people, their retirement savings is entirely dependent upon Social Security. That's their main way that they're going to fund their consumption in retirement. And they have a small amount in maybe a defined pension, but probably a retirement account like a 401k or a 403b, or maybe an IRA. So they don't have a lot of savings. Maybe they own their house and they might think about borrowing against their house for some of their retirement needs, but a lot of people don't have to make expensive decisions about, well, should I invest in stocks or bonds? They just don't have enough assets that those kinds of choices are that meaningful. So it tends to be more about basic financial management and the sort of planning that's involved in that activity. I do want to emphasize that this isn't the first time we've talked about the retirement topic in general. In past lunchtime learning, we've had financial series briefs on rules of thumb for retirement planning, and there's a link in the brief, especially about how much you should have saved certain ages. So that rules of thumb brief is based on some of the research that is done here and other places have done to sort of think about retirement planning. And so that's another resource that I want to direct your attention to. Probably not as important for the groups that we're talking about that are, you know, probably not amassing great amounts of wealth or savings for retirement. And so maybe it's something more for people who have more resources available to them. The other brief is called Understanding Social Security, and it's particularly about the decision that we all have to make at some point about when to claim Social Security. So it could be as early as 62. You know, if you have a spouse who's older than you, they might claim before you do. And there's lots of strategies regarding when you claim and delaying that claiming time oftentimes as long as possible. So those are resources I just want to draw your attention to and recognize that we've covered those topics in the past. We're getting some feedback, so somebody might have an open line. Just double check, make sure you're muted. Thanks. So the audience for the curriculum I'm going to talk about today is really lower income people who maybe get public assistance, but they're working. So they have some earnings. They may not have retirement benefits through their employer, meaning that their employer doesn't offer a 401k or a pension. It's entirely on them to sort of figure out their retirement plan. They may not be making enough where saving for retirement is practical, however. And for them, it may be a matter of maximizing their use of public assistance while they're working. You know, that things like getting the earned income tax credit and similar kinds of tools. As well as, you know, if possible, getting things like food share or SNAP. These families are oftentimes complex in that it's not just a couple or a single person in their 50s, but it's maybe a couple in their 50s with an adult child who still lives with them, or maybe one of their parents who lives with them. So we might have up to three or more generations in a single household. And, you know, this makes for more complicated decision-making. It's not just about how much I save for my own retirement, but how much I have put aside to help care for my aging parents. So definitely lots of families at all kinds of income levels have complex families. But when we talk about this income level especially, it's hard to think about how you stretch a relatively modest income across the generations. It makes these kinds of decisions even more challenging. One of the things that's probably not as important when you're talking about lower income working families is estate planning, or thinking about how to minimize estate taxes. Most families in this income bracket, wealth bracket, are not going to even file for estate taxes. They're not going to have enough of an estate that it's really going to matter. And so the issue about how to invest to minimize estates and use trust and those kinds of things are just not in the sort of in the mix. And in some ways, as educators, that makes it easier on us. We can take some complicated tax and legal issues and not have to address them because they're not as relevant for this population. Likewise, you know, one of the issues that comes up, and if you, you know, look at any of the magazines that are out there on personal finance, they talk a lot about, well, should I invest in this kind of portfolio or that kind of portfolio? Again, not as important for this group, because for them it's just about saving, and oftentimes the savings is emergency funds, making sure that they are able to make ends meet from month to month, from week to week, to take advantage of opportunities when they come up and to pay for contingencies if they need to. And the use of credit may be something that these families are doing all the way through retirement. It's not, you know, the old model used to be, you know, you burn your mortgage note before you retire. For a lot of families, that's not going to be an option. They're going to have debt in through retirement and continue to be managing debt even after they separate from the workforce. So Finances 50 Plus is an initiative that the AARP Foundation, if you don't know AARP, that's the American Association of Retired People. It's a very well-regarded, well-established organization that is kind of the, you know, the group representing seniors and on a whole range of issues in Washington and in states, and if you've reached the point where you qualify for AARP, you would get their magazine and have the ability to take part in some of the financial products that they offer and other kinds of services that they provide. But they have a foundation, which is a separate entity, and that foundation is designed to do public service. And they have some funding from the Charles Schwab Foundation, which again is a foundation of a financial services provider, but designated for charitable purposes. And they created a curriculum called Finances 50 Plus. There's a link in the brief itself at aarp.org/finances50plus, where all the materials I'll be talking about today are housed. So they have a report on the curriculum. They have the curriculum itself. They have materials in English and Spanish and in Chinese. They have support for the educators. So there's a lot of content that's available there, and you're free to look at that specifically. I'm familiar with the program because I was involved in helping with the evaluation study, which was conducted with a team of researchers, including researchers at AARP and a survey firm, and some researchers here at Wisconsin, to help design the survey and help do some of the analysis of the survey information that's available. But before I talk about the findings of the research, let me talk about what the curriculum is. It is basically three workshops. They are designed to be up to 90 minutes. You can look at the materials and decide if 90 minutes is too much or not enough. But essentially three major content areas are broken up into these three sessions that are typically held at a community-based location. And each session is focusing on a different aspect of managing finances. The curriculum itself is evidence-based. It's, you know, designed to have specific learning objectives, and the materials are organized in such a way that, you know, you could get an educator or even a volunteer who is part of the educator of the education project up to speed and able to facilitate these sessions in a relatively quick way. It's a very applied curriculum in that it's not really designed to be put up a PowerPoint and push through a bunch of terms and definitions. It's a little bit of content which you would work through using the workbooks, which are available online. Maybe you might show those on slides, but, you know, mostly it's discussion and activity. So it's very much an experiential adult learner based model. As I said earlier, the materials are already translated into multiple languages. And the other thing is they have a component to it, and I don't want to get too caught up in the semantics, but they engage volunteers through AARP has an extensive volunteerism initiative. So they've engaged their volunteers to be part of the program in the past. And they call them mentors who help people who develop an action plan to follow through in that action plan. That, you know, depending on your program, might look like a coaching program as well. So there's a component to this, which is more one-on-one counseling / mentoring / coaching, depending on how you define it. But the idea is some kind of follow-up with clients who go through the education program. Typically, this is structured as three consecutive weeks, so maybe three evenings or three Saturdays. And it has a pre-post assessment in it a post-assessment for each module. So after each module, there's basically a quiz, so we can see how well the learners are picking up the content. The curriculum itself is designed to give people an action plan at the end. So they will walk away with a set of financial goals, a spending plan. They'll either have reviewed their own credit report or know how to review a credit report because they've done a sort of mock credit report review. They have interactive exercises, some which might be with the mentor / coach, some which might be with a peer or with the instructor themselves. But ultimately, the idea is that each learner will have a written plan, and that written plan is something that they could be contacted about in the future to see how well they're doing, to check in and see if they're taking action on their action plan, if they might need help, if there might be a need to make referrals. And basically to hold them accountable to what they said they wanted to do. It should be noted that Finances 50 Plus is not about just saving more. And so this isn't a curriculum which is already has a predetermined outcome. It is rather designed to help people to define what it is that's important to them and then try to set forward an action plan to do that thing, whatever that might be for them. So it's very much self-actualized and not designed to be a sort of one-size-fits-all solution. So many of the activities in the very first section are around this very idea about goals and values and what's important, how to develop a budget, how to do a self-assessment about where you're at, and to do some basic goal setting. Then the second session is specifically about credit and debt. That tends to be a very important topic, specifically for lower-income working people. Credit cards tends to be the dominant form of debt. And so a lot of the activities in that section are about reviewing a credit report and how to deal with debt problems and what that means when debt problems arise. And the last section is really around sort of protecting and building assets. And so this is about savings. So this is where savings plays a direct role. Not just savings for retirement, though. Savings including savings for emergencies, and paying down debt, which might be as important as savings. But it's also about avoiding scams. We know that older people, even people in their 50s, are oftentimes targeted for scams and fraud. And so avoiding those kinds of issues and protecting assets from frauds and scams. And then finally, it's about developing the action plan and implementing it. So having a plan with specific steps that can be supported in the future. As I said earlier, all the materials are posted online. There's a participant guide as well as an instructor guide, and then some background information that can be shared with volunteers so they can be educated on what the curriculum is. So volunteers oftentimes won't sit through the course itself, but they can look through the materials and get a sense of what the course was like for any follow-up that they might do with a client. There are a number of instructional notes. I mean, basically, it's the learner guide with text boxes and call-outs and in-class scenarios and things like that. So it's sort of an annotated textbook that, you can think about it as the instructor's copy to help the learner or help the educator engage with the learner. The use of the coach or mentor is... I would say it's not integral, it's not required, but it's a nice feature. It's one of the nice details about the way this was designed, but the way that Finances 50 Plus was designed, is they recognize that information alone is not enough. Oftentimes people need some encouragement, they need accountability, they need some follow-up. And so the curriculum is designed to include that follow-up. They've been very clear and you'll see it on the website if you look at the materials, that any volunteers who are engaged with the program have to be trained and instructed and really agree up front that they are there to be a sounding board and to check in with clients, and they're not there to give advice. So they shouldn't be playing the role of counselor or salesperson or anything else, but really just checking in and hopefully being supportive as people try to take action on their own action plans. So there's some discussion in the materials about those kinds of topics. The other thing that's nice about the curriculum is that because it's associated with AARP, and AARP has been around for a while and focused on issues, financial issues specifically for lower income people and for aging Americans, they have a number of tools on their website that can be very useful. And their it's nothing on that website is designed to promote a particular financial institution or, has the problems with objectivity that I talked about earlier. So they have a benefits check, so people can see what benefits they might be eligible for and learn a little bit how they might apply for those benefits. There's a number of different calculators about retirement planning and related kind of calculators. And then there's even an interactive planning tool on their website. So a lot of web-based materials and links that are available. And that, again, all of these are in blue in your brief, so you can follow them and get more information. So let me talk a little about the evidence supporting this project. there's been, I think there were 11 pilot sites. So these were community-based organizations that ran the curriculum. And they did a pre-test, post-test evaluation, and then they followed up a second time. So we have actually 3 points in time data on the learners in the program. And the survey was pretty extensive. I think it was at least a 6 or 8 page survey. It included financial behaviors, attitudes, debt level, a number of different issues, and they had a control group. It wasn't random assignment, but they had a group of learners who didn't take part, but were similar. And so that control group was matched based on all the baseline characteristics that we could match on to provide a pretty good comparison about what the effects might be. So overall, the program was pretty successful. I think it's one of the stronger effects that we've seen from a financial education program, especially one from a relatively brief duration. And I think design of it being interactive, the use of mentors and the other aspects of it are certainly part of it, but part of it is just well targeted and well designed. And it doesn't try to do everything. It tries to do a few things well, and it seems to do that based on the evidence. So some examples that are in the brief, the proportion of people who said they were very worried dropped from 22% to 14%, so they feel less stress and anxiety about their finances. And so we, you know, we're encouraged by this because one of the things we've talked about as a team is that our ultimate goal is really around financial well-being. And how do we make people feel secure about their family financial situation? And that's not about having the most amount of money you can. It's about feeling that you're in control and not feeling stressed and not having anxiety about your finances. And there's a link in the brief to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's well-being study that's out, and that's a lot of what they talk about in the study. People define being financially well off, not in terms of dollar values, but in terms of not being stressed and having a sense of financial freedom. But beyond the sort of mental health measures or the stress measures, there's a number of behavioral measures, things like people saying that they calculated their net worth, they tried to reduce the fees they paid for financial services, that they stayed on budget, that they paid more attention to their debt payment, that they paid more attention to their credit card statements. So lots of positive financial behaviors, things that are at least consistent with people paying more attention to their finances and being more thoughtful about their finances. We saw also some declines of negative behaviors, like overdrawing bank accounts, being contacted by a collector, taking out a payday loan. So this planning, this attention to spending plans, to budgeting, to having goals that are driving action is resulting in people avoiding some of those things that we might think more problematic. We also heard or saw in the surveys an increase in people doing some saving, both non-retirement saving and retirement saving. So it's generally a population where saving is challenging because incomes are relatively low, and there's not a lot left over. But we saw a big increase in both retirement and non-retirement savings. The other important thing is that people started reporting that they had goals. And, you know, as you know, having a goal and an action plan makes it much more likely that people will engage in behaviors. They're much more thoughtful, engaged. And we saw a big increase in both having a goal and people's attainment of those goals or taking action on those goals. And you can see there's a figure in there that shows that rise over time of participants with financial goals. So overall, it's a pretty strong body of evidence from a very well done piece of research that suggests that this program, which, you know, if used exactly as intended, would take about 5 to 6 hours. So it has a pretty strong impact, despite being relatively modest in terms of its length. And what I like about it as well is that you can go a lot of different directions with learners. Let's say you had a class of 20 people who went through this program. Some number of them are going to be interested in what's next. And it would be very easy to, once you have the foundation of the Finances 50 Plus, to engage in activities, maybe with around coaching and budget coaching or different kinds of coaching activities, depending on what the client's goals are. Or maybe it's something more specific, like when should I claim Social Security? How do I understand Medicare? How should I manage my retirement accounts, even though they're minimal? What kinds of things might I be thinking about? Or even wills and estate planning, which are topics I know a lot of people have done in the past because there's been some extension support materials around those topics. So there's a lot more I think you can do once you have this basic foundation. You've got now a group of learners who have the ability to build in the future and to take on new learning experiences. I want to share with you a few resources that might be useful as you think about whether it's using Finances 50 Plus or a similar curriculum, what you might want to build on. And these are all evidence-based. They're provided by either universities or federal government. So these are not designed to sell you a specific financial product. You know, it's a big concern with educators is they don't want to provide information that's not trusted or objective. So for example, there's the Department of Labor, a federal agency, which has Savings Fitness, which is around basically planning for your retirement, even at a younger age. So they have a number of interactive worksheets. They have an online set of materials that are saved as PDF files that you could use as handouts. And so, again, highly trusted, good materials that might be of use. Rutgers has their Financial Fitness for the Rest of Your Life. Pretty basic, but gets into some more of these issues around understanding Social Security and related topics. UW Cooperative Extension has the Family Estate Planning, a bulletin I know many of you have worked on, either helped create or helped deliver over the years, and you know, that's a very popular, one of the most popular financial related publications that exists within Wisconsin Extension. It's actually used by people all across the country as a model for how Extension can address these kinds of issues. So that can be a great resource. Boston College has a really nice, well-formatted, very user-friendly, easy-to-understand guide to understanding Social Security. And that's an online guide they have. It's stored as a PDF, but their website has a number of other good resources around understanding specifically Social Security and that whole claiming situation. Boston College has really been a leader in that particular topic. The National Endowment for Financial Education, many of you know as NEFI, they have a whole website called My Retirement Paycheck, which is related to retirement planning. There's a bunch of fact sheets and calculators, and that can be really useful. Texas A&M has some specific financial planning information designed for younger people and women, which is a particular group that you know, we find in the research, women tend to outlive their spouse. They oftentimes are the ones who are living with the consequences of having a financial plan or not having one, and so engaging them in the conversation earlier in life is important. Within UW Extension, again, there's the Shifting Gears for Later Years, which is specific around farm family retirement planning. And I know Peggy Olive's on the call. She might comment about this a little bit, about her experience with that program. And many of you probably also contributed to that or have been involved with some of those efforts. Iowa State has a website on retirement with a number of videos, which are really nice, including some spreadsheets. And then eExtension actually has a self-study guide around investing for your future. So there's a lot, I don't want to belabor all of these, but there's a lot of resources out there, and as I open up the line in just a couple of minutes, you'll probably suggest some others as well. So there's a lot out there. Hopefully this list helps you narrow the list a little bit and sort of think about what'll be useful for your learners and the needs in your community. But I also want to mention that I've just been talking about financial education for this population. There's a lot of other topics that are related to family living, but aren't financial. So that might be the caring for elderly, caring for parents, being a caregiver as your own parents age. And so there's a number of videos that are available. There's a link to that that's available. There's Idaho Extension has a number of different resources related to end-of-life planning, so not necessarily financial, but even the non-financial and family issues. And I know a lot of people have had great success with the University of Minnesota's yellow pie plate series when thinking about non-titled personal property. How do we decide who gets the stuff that might be involved in a family, a particularly larger family? You know, it's not estate planning per se, but it's really thinking about the details of how we're going to deal with all those things that have more sentimental value or other kinds of value than necessarily financial assets. So again, this is a lot to throw at you, but I think this is an important topic. As I said, this is one of the most frequent questions and I think one of the topics that a lot of communities have demand around. And it's hard to know what to do. What I like about Finances 50 Plus, the AR materials, is they're well-designed, they're evidence-based, and they're a good foundation. Once you tackle those issues, then you could build upon more complicated topics, and it provides sort of a continuum of educational activities that can be provided for learners as they move forward. You know, I think as we have just a generally aging baby boom population, we're going to see more demand for this kind of work. And probably more resources as well. So it'll be important, I think, for all of us to pay some attention as new materials come out and also to be sort of keen on what are the both the fundamental foundational kinds of issues that people who are at retirement or near retirement or even in retirement, what their needs are, and then what kind of we can build upon from there, especially as people age and have to deal with managing their resources in retirement. This is going to be one of the healthiest group of retirees we've seen in the country. They may very well live a long time, and managing their finances will be an important part of that. There's one last thing I want to share with you is there is a retirement confidence survey that I included. So EBRI is sort of a national association or a national intermediary that helps share information about retirement and retirement planning, particularly employer-based retirement. But that information could be useful to you all as you think about designing a plan of work and any planning activities you might have in this area. So I'll stop there. I'll open up the line for questions and discussion. I'm curious about any other materials that you might find that are useful, and if anybody has an experience with any of these materials, then can talk about how they use them as well.
Hi, Michael. This is Captain Emmanuel from Trempealeau County. This is my first one to just listen in on, and it's not a topic that I had any requests, but it worked out well for my schedule to learn about this, so appreciate this very much. My question is actually in regards to, you mentioned this curriculum that was sponsored by a financial institution that's being run through AARP, and I had run into some challenges in my county with trying to use curriculum from a local credit union, and a bunch of schools, well, it's like a curriculum that can be taught in schools, and it would be in the banks or the credit unions willing to do it, and it was really rejected, I guess, from in the county of having it being backed by a certain financial institution. I'm wondering, just in general, how do we approach that in extension with a financial institution paying for curriculum that we then in turn use?
What's important, I think, is the who actually developed that curriculum. So in this case, AARP Foundation developed the curriculum with a grant they got from a foundation that was funded by a financial institution. So we've got sort of multiple arm's length transactions here. That's very different from a financial institution developing and implementing and, you know, sometimes even teaching a curriculum, which is not at all arm's length. So in this case, AARP, they developed what they were going to develop, and they just happened to use some resources provided by the foundation. And usually, anytime it's got a foundation associated with it, that's a charitable function. If they try to do activities that are business-related, it's no longer, it's a violation of tax law. So there's definitely some firewalls put up when you see the foundations employed in these kinds of situations.
Thank you.
Hey, Michael, this is Peggy Alice, and you mentioned the Shifting Gears curriculum that was developed with our Ag and Natural Resource Education Program here in Extension. And the materials are on their Workspace site, and it's designed to be 2 full days and working with community speakers. So it kind of piggybacks on Catherine's question about, you know, when you're working with local people. So the shifting gears for later years has some basic budgeting and separating out family income from farming income, just so you can start getting an idea of what you need to live on when you're not also operating the farm. But then it goes into accounting and estate planning and insurance, and so it relies on you bringing in some of your local contact people to be, it provides some materials you can use, but then people might, your local professionals might also have their own materials. So I guess it just goes into knowing how to work with community organizations and talking with them ahead of time so that you can let them know it's an educational program, it's not a sales pitch. Of course, you know, they can put their cards at the back of the table. And then how do you also kind of spread that around so you don't can kick off one organization you're using or an accountant or an insurance firm versus another. So it does open up a few issues using that program in a community. So you really have to know your community and kind of know your partners and develop those relationships to bring in those guest speakers, especially for those areas that, you know, we're not licensed or trained in. So I just wanted to share a little bit of background on that.
Peggy, this is Lori Zero. In that Shifting Gears curriculum, is it all focused on farm families, or would the pieces on estate planning be more general where you could speak to a more broad population?
For the Shifting Gears for the later years, because the speaker on the estate planning is part of that curriculum, it really is more focused on issues that come up when you're talking about, you know, transfer of estate and property for farming, which is different than just general, you know, the family house or the car or the other estate issues for a non-farming family. So I would say if you're interested in having just kind of a general estate planning or bringing in some local resources to that to kind of keep it separate from the specific farm issues.
Thanks. Thanks, Peggy. Can you give us a sense of how frequently the Shifting Gears has been taught or where it's been taught?
I don't have a good sense on that. We piloted it about 2 years ago, and I know it was in Richland and Clark, and I believe in Winnebago. So a different mix of populations and farms, different types of farms. And then I believe a few other counties have kind of picked up the materials and are putting a bit of their own spin or getting, you know, maybe it's not 2 full days a week apart, but maybe they're kind of figuring out what works best in their community.
Has anybody used any other curricula or tools or materials that they'd like to share?
I am wondering if anyone on the call has used any of the, you know, caring for the caregiver or the videos and caring for elders that maybe has worked some of the finances into those programs.
This is Catherine. I don't know if what you mean by that, Peggy, is powerful tools for caregivers. I have taught that class one time with a neighboring county family living educator. And it's pretty strict curriculum in that they don't really want you deviating from the curriculum. That being said, there are some, from what I recall, some planning worksheets on just kind of how to make basic decisions, which is quite helpful when you're under a lot of stress. And you can use the kind of making decisions worksheet for lots of different things your family might be going through while you're a caregiver. So it could be finances. It could also be like what kind of medicine to use or where the person should live, things like that. So I could see that decision-making guide being a complimentary resource to this, if that's what you're kind of asking for.
Yeah, Catherine, that's really helpful because I've never used that curriculum. So I just wondered how much it got into that topic.
Any other questions or comments or discussion that people want to bring up? I would just encourage you all to bring up the brief and check out some of those links. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there, and I know, you know, maybe the reason we get so many questions is because there is so much stuff out there, and so people are sort of struggling for what to do first or do next. But this is probably one area of financial education where there's pretty strong materials. It's probably more evidence-based than in any other part of the financial education world. And I think one where if you're not already seeing growth in demand because of it just general aging of the population, you probably will. So in a lot of ways, we're well positioned as we think about what's coming up down the road. So, you know, spend 20 minutes clicking through some of those links, check out some of these materials. There's a lot out there. There's, you know, probably dozens of worksheets across those websites, and calculators and other tools that you could build into existing classes or begin to create something new on your own.
Hey, Michael, this is Peggy again. Can I put a plug in for the Center for Financial Security is sponsoring a webinar on Tuesday, April 7th at noon, and it will feature Dave Vansel from the Department of Financial Institutions talking about Money Smart Week, and then it will have Carol Maria from FDIC talking about the curriculum they use, and then I'll be sharing a few other curricula that are out there for, you know, maybe not specific for retirement, but for other types of populations we might be working with. If you're looking for stuff, you can kind of pick up and go.
Yeah, and hopefully everybody knows those are free, and they are usually archived as well. So let me just talk a bit about where we're going to be for the rest of the spring here. So next month, April, will be our next lunchtime learning. We're going to talk about financial coaching. So Peggy and I will lead that one and talk about the A4 model and other kinds of applications of financial coaching. We may have some new data at that point in time about some impacts we've seen on financial coaching at a national level, which are pretty promising. And then between now and then, probably over the next 4 or 5 weeks, many of you will be hearing from us because we're going to be looking for volunteers to do a book review. And so if you've not participated in these calls before, the last call of the academic year, we usually try to pick about 4 colleagues from across the state. They pick a current book, a sort of popular book around personal finance or financial-related topics, and they review it for the rest of the call. So basically the call is a series of 4 book reports, usually 5 or 10 minutes apiece and some discussion. The perk of this is if you volunteer, you actually get all 4 books sent to you. So it's a way to, if nothing else, acquire a few items for your library. We'll work together with the volunteers for picking what books will be in the mix for this year. So it's a nice, fun way to end the semester for the series, and also potentially a way to think about some books that you might want to pick up over the summer months. So we'll be in touch, or feel free to reach out to either Peggy or me on either the coaching or the summer reading suggestions calls that are upcoming. So with that, I will end it. I thank you all for your time today, and have a great week.